Hey, good evening, everybody, and thank you so much for joining as we do tomorrow's daf, Chulin daf Nun Dalet. We are holding a daf Nun Gimel Amud Beis. We are at Rav Nachman Amar, I think, Bekotz at Shetinokev HaCholol, which is about five, 6 lines from the end of the page on daf Nun Gimel Amud Beis. Say Shiras once again, sponsored by Dr. David Lander, in honor of his wife and children, and Nishmas's mother, Golda Bas Simcha, Aleha Shalom, the Neshama Shavnelion. We thank you very much for the continued sponsorship of the Daf Yomi Shir. So what we're going to learn about today is the following. First, we're going to talk about what would indicate that a drusa is in fact a trefa. How much redness of the kana would indicate that it is a trefa, if there's redness on the kana. How do you check a drusa? Meaning, which parts of the drusa do you have to check to see whether the parts of the inside became red or not? Then the Gemara is going to have a machlokas between where Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish discuss Rav, and they discuss Rav's teaching about dislodged simanim that are shechted, and then the Gemara is going to talk about whether we're allowed to add to the list of trefos, or we have the exact trefos that Chazal gave us, and you're not allowed to add anything to that list of trefos. Then the Mishnah on the bottom of Amud Aleph is going to talk about ailments that don't make an animal a trefa. This is Perek Elu Trefos, but this Mishnah is going to be Elu Ksheros. Which ones are not trefa? Which ones are going to be kosher? The Gemara is going to have a machlokas, whether Elu Trefos or Elu Ksheros is Dafka. One of those has to be Lav Dafka. Which is Dafka? Which is Lav Dafka? And the Gemara is going to explain that they're really arguing about a piece of the hip that is dislodged from its connecting point. And then the Gemara is going to talk about standing up in middle of a work day for a Talmud Chacham and for Mevi'ei Bikurim. If you're in the middle of working, are you allowed to stand up for a Talmud Chacham? The Gemara is going to conclude today's daf and go into tomorrow's daf with a discussion, the famous discussion of Ad V'Ad Bechlal or Ad V'Lo Ad Bechlal. And we're going to have 6 rayas, whether Ad V'Ad Bechlal or Ad V'Lo Ad Bechlal, but that's going to take us well into tomorrow's daf. So let us begin again about 6 lines from the end of the page on daf Nun Gimel Amud Beis. So says the Gemara, Rav Nachman Amar, Bekotz, if the animal has been pierced by a thorn, it is kosher until the thorn reaches all the way into the cavity of the animal's body. But if it gets to that chalal, then we have to be choshesh that maybe the intestines have been punctured, and as a result of that puncture, it's a trefa. So you can't be machshir it by checking it, because a slight puncture of the would not be detectable, and it would be enough to make it a trefa. Ubedrusa, and the Rav Nachman says, and if it's drusa, mishayadim baser connected b'nei me'ayim, that you can check for. You could just look if the flesh has become reddened in the intestinal area, because if the animal deposited any venom, it would redden the flesh in that area. Razvid masni hachi. Razvid taught Rav Nachman's statement in the following way: bedrusa mishayadim baser connected b'nei me'ayim. When it comes to drusa, you can tell that it became a trefa if the basar has become reddened keneged b'nei me'ayim basimanim, and if it was a drusa on the kana and veshet, then atshiyadim simanim atzmam. Then you would need to see the reddening not of the flesh in the area of the simanim, in the neck of the animal, the simanim themselves would have to turn red. If they themselves hadn't turned red, even if the basar in the area had turned red, it would not be a trefa, because most of the simanim are hard and the venom would not impact them. But if they become reddened, then you see that the venom has impacted them, and therefore the animal would in fact be a trefa. Good, so now the Gemara discusses a little bit more about how much redness of the kana indicates that it in fact is a trefa. Amrav Papa, Bai Rav Bibi Barabaye. Rav Bibi Barabaye asked the following shayla. There's an interesting note over here that the Malo Roim in Maseches Brachos quotes from the Shlach Kadosh, that we always say the yeshivish way of pronouncing the name is Rav Bibi. We say Rav Bibi Bar Abaye because we're used to the name Bibi. It's a wonderful name for a prime minister or something, right? So we think that's the name. However, the Malawa Roim says that no, that's a mispronunciation of the name. The name is Rav Vevai, and he says it's a tsere under the first bays and a kamatz under the second bays. And he says, how do I know that? He says, because I know Tanakh, and it's a name that appears in Sefer Ezra. So the name appears in Sefer Ezra as B'nei Vevai Sheshmeos Esrim Ushlosha. So Mistama, this is a biblical name. It is not a Talmudic name. So his name was Rav Vevai. But anyway, by Rav Bibi Barabaye. Not going to change. Rav Bibi Barabaye asked the following Shaila. Veshet Nukuvasa B'mashahu, Drusasa B'mashahu, the Veshet, if it's punctured, the Behemoth becomes a trefa in a way that the Veshet was Nikav, even if it's just a tiny hole, a tiny puncture in the Veshet, like it says in the Mishnah, it's going to be B'mashahu, and it's going to be trefa in Drusasa B'mashahu, and therefore it's Pashut that the shear of Drisa on the Veshet is also B'mashahu. So, but Kana, when it comes to the Kana, Nukuvasal B'ki Iser, the Kana is a hole in the Kana will only make the animal a trefa if it's the size of an Isar, which is a much larger thing, it's the size of a coin. So, Drusasa B'kama, what about Drisa on the Kana? Do we say that it also needs to be the size of a Ki Isar? Meaning, do we assume that, eventually the venom is going to, if it's impacted the Kana, eventually it's going to drip to the Veshet and it's going to impact the Veshet as well, and therefore you don't need a Ki Isar on the Kana? Or do we say, no, if we see that the Kana is Drusa, so then the Kana has to be impacted in a way that the Kana can get impacted, which is B'ki Isar. So Basa Dayar had the Pshata, that after he raised the Shaila, Rav Bibi Barabaye answered the Shaila, that Echadzev Echadzev B'mashahu, that even on the, that both on the Kana and the Veshet, even a Mashahu is enough, if it's Drusa, even a Mashahu, that's enough to make it a Trefa. My time, Ziyari Mikla Kali Va'azil. We assume that the venom will continue to burn through and will ultimately reach the Veshet, not just the Kana, and once it reaches the Veshet, even a Mashahu is going to make it a Trefa. So that's why we assume that even just a little bit on the Kana is enough to be problematic. So says Gemara, Yasser Rav Yitzchak Bar Shmuel Bar Marta Kamed Rav Nachman. Rav Yitzchak Bar Shmuel Bar Marta was sitting in front of Rav Nachman, V'yasav Kamar, and he was saying, Drusa Sha'amru, when the Chum say that we have to be worried about Drusa, Tzricha B'dika Keneged B'nei Me'ayim. You need to check the entire back and belly and the sides of the animal, any place that corresponds to the B'nei Me'ayim, to the internal organs and the intestines. But if none of that basar in any of those places have become red, then you don't need to check other places. You don't have to check the flesh on its legs and the flesh on its neck and the just Keneged B'nei Me'ayim, because the behema will only become a trefa al yidei drisa if it was Keneged the B'nei Me'ayim, nowhere else. Amalei Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman said to Rav Yitzchak, Helukim, by God, Mori Barav, Mikapa V'yaratma, that Rav used to tell us that you have to be bodik from the calf until the erech, then it's not enough to just check from the Keneged the B'nei Me'ayim. Now there's a machlokas Rishonim, whether there's a bedika for a vaday drusa, or we only assume a suffic drusa, you could be matar al yidei bedika. Meaning, what if you know that the animal is a drusa? Does checking work, or do you say no? If it was a drusa, obviously it's a trefa, right? So does it work to check a vaday drusa? So that's a machlokas. Tosos brings a raya from our sugya that it must be that you're able to check a vaday drusa, and that if you don't see any signs of redness, it is not a trefa. How does he know this? Because our sugya must be talking about a vaday drusa. And it talks about checking. It talks about where to check. How do I know it's talking about a vaday drusa? Because it tells you where Rav recommends to check. And remember, we learned in yesterday's daf that Rav holds a suffic drusa is lakula. That a suffic drusa you just don't have to worry about at all. Suffic drusa is not a problem at all. So what are you checking for? So elamite must be that it's a vaday drusa. And you see that with a vaday drusa, it works to check, that you're able to check it. So that's what the raya that Tosos has. Basically what we're saying is that if you hold that we're talking about a suffic drusa over here, you're going to have to explain why Rav thinks that you have to check it at all. After all, Rav is not choshish for a suffic drusa. So the Ur Sameach discusses that, and the Ur Sameach suggests that he suggests that over here perhaps we're talking about a case where there were two animals, and one of them was a vaday drusa. You just don't know which animal it is. So suffic drusa in a chinami, you could just ignore. But a vaday drusa, you can't ignore. But what if you have a Vade Drusa, you just don't know which one is the Vade Drusa? That's where you would check, the Vade Drusa. That's what the Or Sameach suggests. Anyway, so we said that Rav holds, you have to check, Mi Kappa V'Yadatma. So my Kappa, what does a Kaf mean over here? Ilem a Kappa D'Yadah, if it means the Kaf Hayad, like the hand of the animal, Hainu Keneged B'nei Me'ayim, that meaning like the shoulder, rather, of the animal, well, that would be Keneged B'nei Me'ayim, because it's right by the lungs and the liver of the animal, which are also called b'nei me'ayim. So therefore, there wouldn't be any machlokas. Meaning, the Gemara set it up like it's a machlokas. That Rav Yitzchak bar Marta said kamei d'Rav Nachman that it's only connected b'nei me'ayim. And then he said no. But Rav said you have to do mikapa v'yadatma. But if kapa just means like the shoulder area, so that mikapa v'yadatma would mean the same thing as b'nei me'ayim. Ela mikapa d'mocha. Kapa must mean a part of the skull of the animal, the adatma, until the hind legs or the thighs rather of the animal. They have to check the entire inside of the animal's body, connected and even connected the simanim of the kan and the veshet. And if you find that it's red in such in that area, then it's going to be a trefa as well. Ki salik Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef, when Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef went from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, Ashkechinu Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish Tiyasi v'Kamri. He found that Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish were sitting and they were saying this din that drusa sharm tzrich bedika keneged b'nei me'ayim, that a drusa needs bedika, you need to check keneged the b'nei me'ayim. So Amaluhu Rav Chiya bar Yosef said to them, Helu Kim, Mori Barav, Mikapa Vyadatma. Keneged B'nei Me'ayim is not enough. Rav said you have to check Mikapa Vyadatma. So you have to check much more than just Keneged B'nei Me'ayim. You even have to check the Makam Simanim. So then a fascinating conversation ensued. Amrle Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish said, so keep in mind, what was happening over here? Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish were talking and learning. They said one thing in learning. And then comes along Rabbi Bar Yosef and he says, no, Rav didn't say that. Rav said you have to do even more. So Amrle Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish says, Manu Rav, lo yadanale. Who's this guy Rav? I never heard of this guy. Never heard of this fellow Rav. Well, what are they talking about? Rav? I don't know who it is. So the Achronim says, well, how's that possible? He doesn't know, Reish Lakish doesn't know who Rav is. Rav was Meshamesh by Rebbe first. So he says, this is a raya to Shita Satosos in the Sefer Ateres Shaul. He says, it's a raya to Shita Satosos in Dav Lamed Ches, where Tosos writes that Rav's real name was Abba, because they only called him Rav because of his chashivos. So it was a name of chashivos that was given to him. So it could be that when Rav was being Meshamesh Rebbe in Eretz Yisrael, he was not yet known by the name Rav. He was known by his real name. So Reish Lakish says, I knew this guy Abba that used to be here, but who's Rav? I never heard of this Rav. Meaning he actually never heard of someone named Rav, because that wasn't actually his real name. That's what he suggests. However, the Sefer Dor Revi'i writes, according to Rashi, though, that his name was actually Rav, and Shmuel called him Abba as a Lashon of Kavod, so then how could it be that Reish Lakish doesn't know who Rav was? That was actually his real name. So it could be that Adrabba, Reish Lakish of course remembered who Rav was. It's just that he was bothered that they're calling him by his name. Meaning, if you assume like Rashi that his name was actually Rav, what Reish Lakish is probably saying is, Rav? That's how you call him? You know how big he is? You can't call him Rav. You got to call him by a Tawar Shel Kavod. You're not allowed to call him by his name. And maybe that's what upset Reish Lakish. But anyway, so Reish Lakish says, who's this guy Rav? So I'm the Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says to Reish Lakish, Veloni, he really loves the Talmud. You really don't remember Rav? Sheshimish is Rebbe Rabba. He was Meshamish Rabbi Yudah Anasi, V'Rabbi Chia, and he was also Meshamish Rabbi Chia, V'Elukim, and it's a lashon of a shvua. Kolos Mshana Sheshimish also Talmud be yeshiva. The entire time that he was Meshamish his Rebbeim in yeshiva, Anishi Mashti Ba'amida, meaning while he was sitting, I had to be Meshamish Ba'amida, because he was more chashuv than I was, says Rabbi Yochanan. So Rav was there, he got to sit. I had to stand, because he was so much more chashuv than I was. So Reish Lakish went on to ask Rabbi Yochanan, Uman Gavar, and what's he great at? So Rabbi Yochanan responded, "Hu gavra b'kula. He's great at everything. He knows it in midos, in sitkas, in this, in all areas of halacha. He's a gadol in everything." One of my talmidim just told me, there was a picture going around this week of Rav Schechter and Rav David Cohen sitting and talking and learning. They both happened to have been in Pesach for Shabbos last week, so Rav Schechter wanted to go visit him, and so someone took pictures on Matzah Shabbos for Sunday morning. They were sitting and talking and learning. So one of my talmidim said he was once talking to Rav David Cohen, and Rav Schechter's name came up, and he said he's a giant in learning, and he's probably the gadol hador in midos. They asked, what does it mean? Man gavar? Who gavar b'kula? He's a gavar in everything. He knows everything. So it's interesting, this idea that Rabbi Yochanan said that Rav used to be meshamish his rebbeim while sitting down, whereas Rabbi Yochanan was relegated to standing because he was not as great. The Gemara later on, Daf Kuflam Zayinam Beis, is going to tell us that Rabbi Yochanan was made that when he was sitting together with Rav in front of Rabbi, before Rav went to Bavel, he was sitting 17 rows behind Rav. They used to sit in order of chashivus. So Rabbi Yochanan said, "I was way less chashiv than Rav. I sat 17 rows behind him." But you do get the impression that he sat. So it could be that that happened later, that Rabbi Yochanan ultimately earned a place to get a seat, but he was still 17 rows behind Rav. Anyway, miyad pasuk Reish Lakish va'amar. So Reish Lakish started to teach, and he said, "Biram, Zachros hu ish l'tov. We remember that this man for the good." Normally, also ish is not a nice way to refer to someone unless it's followed by the word l'tov. Usually, also ish is a reference to Yeshu, to Yashka. But he says Zachros hu ish l'tov. Shamru shmua mipiv, that if there's a behema or an oaf, and the kana is shmuta ushchuta, it's the kana is dislodged from its the place where it's normally attached. And it's also shechted, but you don't know which happened first. Did it become dislodged first and then you shechted it, in which case it's a trefa? Or did you shecht it first and then it became dislodged, in which case it's perfectly fine? Ksheira. You can assume that it only became dislodged after the shechita, because you wouldn't have been able to do a proper shechita on a dislodged kana. That's what Reish Lakish said. Rabbi Yochanan Omer. Rabbi Yochanan says that no, you can't rely on that stara. Yavi v'yakif. What you should do is make another slice in the kana and compare it to the slice that's already there, and then you'll see if this is what it looks like when you slice something after it's already dead, or whether the shechita happened when it was still alive. So Amar Rav Nachman lo shanu ela shelo tafas pasimanim, that this idea that you're not able to shecht it when it's shmuta, when it's dislodged, is only if you're not holding on to the simanim. But if you're holding on to the simanim at the time that you shecht it, it could be that a shmuta shateyasa shchuta, that which is dislodged can still be shechted effectively. Zaklal. Then the Mishnah said that we have a klal. Any type of ailment that the animal has that it cannot survive, that's the definition of trefa. So lasuya, what's this coming to include? Lasuya, shef shmeitza. It's coming to include the seven types of trefos that the Amoraim list that don't appear in the Mishnah. That's what we refer to as the Shev Shmeitza. So it's more famously the name of a Sefer that the author of the Ketzos wrote during his Shavu Brachos week. He wrote it when he was 17 years old, the Shev Shmeitza. It's full of great lamdas. So he got married when he was 17, and he wrote for each day of Shavu Brachos, wrote a different Shmeitza. But this is the original source of that, of the phrase Shev Shmeitza, that there are seven types of trefos that are mentioned only by Amoraim, that are not mentioned by the Tanaim. So debay Yosef Rishpa, Yosef the hunter or the trapper, he used to trap animals for a living, said the people in his household machu b'nidan begida nashia v'katli, they would hit with a stick, they would hit animals begida nashia on the gida nashia, and they would kill the animals in that way by striking it on the gida nashia. So also came to Rabbi Yudah Mesera. They went to Rabbi Yudah Mesera to ask, what if they struck the animal in the gida nashia, and then immediately after that they shechted the animal? Do you assume that the animal, since they would typically kill the animal in such a way, that the animal is a treif already? So Amalu. So he said, "V'chila hosik al treifos yesh." You think we have the right to add on to the number of treifos? In the chal mashamanu chachamim. No, we only have the treifos that the chacham said. We're not allowed to add on extra treifos. Debate Rav Papa Parab. Abba Rishba, the people of the house of the Papa Baraba, the Tzayad, said, Machu Bekulia Vekatli. They would take an arrow and shoot it at the kidneys of an animal and puncture the kidneys in that way. And it didn't, but the arrow didn't go into the body of the animal. It just skimmed the back of the animal where the kidneys are, and that's all it hit. And it would kill the animal. So Asul Kamei to Rabbi Abba, they came to Rabbi Abba and they asked the same Shaila, can you shecht it right after you shoot this arrow at it, or do you assume it's a treifa? Because after all, that's the way they typically kill it. So Amalahu, so he said, you think you could add to the treifos? Can't add to the treifos, we only have the treifos that the Chachamim have said. Says, what do you mean? You see that it dies. And we said that any time that an animal is going to die from its wounds, that's what makes it a treifa. So how can you say that we don't add to the treifos? So says Mar Gamiri, Dibidari La Sama Chaya, that if we have a tradition that if we were to treat it medically after suffering that wound, after sustaining that wound, it would be able to recover. It's only because we don't know how to treat it medically, or we choose not to treat it medically. But even though these hunters would kill these animals in this way, that's only because they didn't treat those animals afterwards, but they in fact are a treifa. So we are not mosif on the treifos at all. Now the Rambam in Hilchos Shechita Perek Yud Halachos Yud Beis and Yud Gimel writes that ve'in lohosif al treifos elu klal shekol she'ir lebehema l'chayel of chutz me'elu shemanu chachmei doros harishonim v'skimu alein batei dina Yisrael efshe shetichya v'afilu nodolanu miderach harfua she'ein sof elichios. The Rambam says anything that's not listed by Chazal as one of the treifos, it can live. And even if medical science tells us that it cannot live, v'cheinu shemanu and the Rambam says we have an even bigger problem. Some of the things that Chazal identify as a treifa, guess what? Nowadays, the animal can survive, and people can survive it too. So what do we do about that? What do we do about that? We follow the halacha. It doesn't matter what the metzius is as far as who could live and who can't live. So the Rivash writes in the Tshuva in Siman Taf Mem Zayin that v'im tadin b'dine treifos al pi chachmei harfua, if dine treifos were to follow the chachmei harfua, schar harbe titul min hakatzavim, the butchers would be willing to pay us a lot of money to do that, because we'd be able to save a lot of animals from being treifos, since there are a lot of the treifos are not something that the animal is necessarily going to die from. Now it's a little bit strange because we gave a klal, a kol shein kamo chaya is going to be a treifa. So it is a little bit difficult. So in the Teferis Yaakov he explains that even though the Mishnah gives a klal, kol shein kamo chaya treifa, but nevertheless it's a davar pashut that it's only the treifos that are among the shmona treifos that are mentioned in the Gemara, and all those that the Gemara added are all among the those eight types of treifos. But that which is not nichnas and those shmona treifos, we cannot be mosif to. And even though we know it's not going to live, you have to assume that that there's some sort of a sam that would be able to make it live. So that is the end of the elu treifos section of this parak. Now, says the Mishnah, you got to discuss the flip side. V'elu ksheros ba-behima. The following elements would be kosher on a behima. Nikva ha-gargeres, if the gargeres, the kana, has a puncture in it, oshenistika, or it has a crack in it, ad kama techsar, how much would the kana have to be chaser, and would still be kosher, amishimungam li'alomer, ad ki isari talki, up until the size of an isari talki, nivchasa ha-gulgolas, if the skull is missing, v'lo nikav krum shel moach, the skull is missing a piece, but the membrane around the brain is fully intact, nikav halev v'lo lebeis chalalu, or there's a hole in the heart, but it doesn't reach into the chambers of the heart, nishpara shidra, the spine is broken, but v'lo nifsak hachutshala, but the spinal cord is not severed, nitala kaved, nishtayir eman kazayis, much of the liver is gone, but there's still a kazayis of it that's still there, hemsesu beisakosos shenikvu zelatoch zev. The hemses and beisakosos have a hole, but only to empty one into the other, but not to empty into the rest of the body. Nitalat chol, if the spleen is removed. Nitalat klayos, if the kidneys are removed. Nitalat chiatachton, if the bottom jaw is removed. Nitalat em shala, if the womb is removed. V'charusa, and if a bidei shamayim, and if a lung has dried up because of a fright that the animal had, from a loud noise that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, like a thunder or something. So all of these are ksheros. Hagluda, if the behema has all of its skin missing, it had some sort of boil, some sort of skin condition, that all of its skin peeled off, Rameir Machshir V'Cham Pulsin. Rameir is going to say that's kosher, but the Cham would say no, that's pasul. Pasul is a little bit of a funny word, but Tos Yom Tov writes that we do find Lashon Pasul in that which is Asr Ba'achila on account of it being a treifa. So when we say pasul, we essentially mean treifa over here. What exactly is the Nekudas HaMachlokas between Rameir and the Chachamim? So that's a discussion in Maseches Nidon Daf Nun Hey. There are two Lashonos. The first Lashon says Rameir holds that that if you give it long enough, the skin is going to grow back, and that's why it's kosher. But the Chachamim say before the skin ever grows back, it's going to have so many infections that it's going to die of those infections, so the skin is never going to have a chance to grow back. The second lashon is that that everyone agrees the skin is not growing back. It's just Rav Meir holds that when the skin is all, when an animal is fully skinned, the flesh underneath the skin will take on the role of the skin. It will start to harden and serve as a protective layer for the inside of the animal. And the Chum say no, such a thing doesn't happen. It's never going to be able to take on the role that the skin plays in protecting the rest of the animal. So now, says the Gemara, meaning we said elu trefos, and then we said elu ksheros. So obviously one of these things is lav dafka, because there are thousands of other ailments that we didn't cover. So only these things are kosher. Everything, every other ailment is a trefa, or do we say no? Only those things are trefos. Everything else is kosher. Sitmar Rabbi Yochanan Amar elu trefos dafka. When we said elu trefos, that's dafka. That's to tell me that only those items that were listed in the Mishnah as trefos are in fact trefos, and there's no other disease that the animal could have that would make it a trefa. Rabbi Shimon Lakish Amar Eluk Sheros Dafka. No, our Mishnah says Eluk Sheros is Dafka to tell me that only the diseases in our Mishnah are kosher. Otherwise, there's nothing, no other type of disease that's going to make that the animal would be kosher. So the Gemara says, Frek the Gemara, but my Kamifliki, what type of ailment are they? Are Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish disagreeing about, where one of them says the animal will be a trefa, the other one says it would not be a trefa? So the Gemara says really just one, Bidrav Masna. They're arguing about the ailment that Rav Masna spoke about. Dam Rav Masna, because Rav Masna said, Hai Buka Da Atma, if you have a piece of the hip, the round, hip flexor, I don't know what it is exactly, the ball of the hip that goes into the, that attaches to the thigh bone, to Shaf Miduchtei, that has been dislodged from its place, trefa. That's a trefa. Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Sar Rabbi Yochanan, says, Elu trefos dafka, that when we said Elu trefos in the Mishnah, those are the only things that are a trefa. So Tana trefos, Vitana Zahaklal. So the Mishnah lists the trefos, and it then says Zahaklal, that anything that would not survive is a trefa, to tell me that there must be other things that are not mentioned in the Mishnah that are also trefos, because the Behema cannot live. V'chazye, the Rav Masna, and the Tana intended to refer to the din of Rav Masna, that the behema that suffers this hip ailment is included in that, and he understood that if we're not megaladas, that the din is not that way, people would assume that the behema becomes a trefa with this, because the asya b'zaklal, they would derive it from the klal that the Mishnah gives, because it says that there are other trefos that are not listed in the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, my time, why in fact is this ailment of the dislodged ball of the hip, why would it be derived from the Zeh Klal of the Mishnah? Because the Damiel in the Tule, because it's very similar to the Netila that you have in the Mishnah, that the Mishnah talks about a Kaved Shenital, and therefore in order that people shouldn't make a mistake to think that this would constitute a Trefa, Tani Elu Trefos. That's why we have Elu Trefos. So basically what we're saying is the phrase Elu Trefos is to be mema'it. It's to tell me not other things, even though Zeh HaKlal at the end of the Mishnah seems to be marbet, seems to be included other things. So the Gemara is saying with Zeh HaKlal you would have included this ailment of the ball of the hip, but that's why Elu Trefos comes to tell me no, Hani Yud Trefa Hadar Rav Masna Ksheva, that the case of Rav Masna, that particular ailment that Rav Masna spoke about, is in fact kosher. That's Rabbi Yochanan's presentation. Rav Shimon Lakish Amar Elu Ksheros Dafka. No, it's Elu Ksheros that's in fact Dafka. And in fact, the ailment that Rav Masna spoke about would make the animal a trefa. So tana trefos for tana zaklal. After all, we list the trefos and we list the zaklal, which is an expansive term. V'chazil ed Rav Masna, and the tana intended to refer to Rav Masna the lo asya v'zaklal, because you could not have derived Rav Masna's trefa from zaklal. My time, or why would you not have derived it from zaklal? Because it doesn't fit any of the other descriptions of the trefas in the Mishnah. Lo l'nekuvi tamya. It's not similar to the a trefa that's a result of a nekev. V'lo l'fsuki tamya. It's not similar to the types of trefas that were related to something getting cut or sliced. L'netuli nami lo tamya. And it's not even similar to the kinds of trefas that involve something missing or being taken from the body of the animal. And therefore, in order that you not make a mistake and say that this condition that Rav Masna referred to is going to be kosher, so Tana Eluk Sheiros. That's why our Mishnah had to say Eluk Sheiros as a miut, that Hani Hudik Sheiros had Rav Masna Trefa, that the ailments listed in our Mishnah are kosher, but Rav Masna's type of ailment would be a Trefa. So Gufa, Amr Rav Masna. So let's learn what Rav Masna's actual statement was. Hai Buka Da Atma. This particular piece of the thigh, the hip of the animal, Deshaf Miduchte, that has been dislodged from its place, trefa. V'rava amar kshera, and Rava says that it's kosher. The ifsik nive trefa, but if it's the sinew, the vein that attaches it to the thigh is also snapped, then it's for sure a trefa. V'hilchusa, but we paskin ifsik namik shera, that even if the vein was also snapped, it's still going to be kosher. Ad misakle sakule, until the disease is so bad that the whole area has become rotted out and has sort of started to decompose, then we assume that it's a trefa. That's something that it will never recover from. Okay, then the Mishnah said, "Ad kama techser, how much has to be missing from the kana of the behema for it to be kosher?" So Mishum Liel says, "Until the size of an isarei italki." So Amar Ziiri, said to the people in Bavel, "Atun de lo mischami luchun shiura, you who've never seen an isarei italki that Rabbi Shimon Liel is talking about, so you're not going to know what that means." Meaning he refers to, imagine someone in 100 years from now, they say the size of a penny. How big is a stain, a kesana, the size of a penny, the discontinuing pennies, there's not going to be such a thing as a penny. No one's going to have any idea what you're talking about. So he says, "You Babylonians, you don't know what an isarei italki is. You don't know what it means. Shiure bedinra kurdina'a. Let me give you in terms that you understand. The shiur is the dinar of the Ararat Mountains. Vavi kipshitu zutarti, and it's the size of a small pruta of nechoshes. Umitshtak chabeni pshitu dupumbedisa, and this dinar is can be commonly found among the small change type of money that they have in Pumbedisa. Amra bichana patoraa ilaminai havakai barnavcha, that barnavcha came in front of me uboyimini, and he asked of me dinar kordina'a, for this dinar kordina'a l'shari betrefasa, and he asked of it for me because he wanted to be mesha'er, he wanted to measure a trefa with it, meaning he didn't need the actual coin, he wasn't going to the gumball machine to buy something for himself, he needed this coin because he was measuring a trefa. He wanted, just like a lot of times poskim will ask for a penny if they're measuring the size of a kesem in for hilchus nida. So he came for the coin. So I'm a money changer, I'm middle of my work day, he came for to me to ask me for this type of coin because he wanted a paskin the shayla. So I wanted to stand for him. He's a big Talmud Chacham. He would not allow me to stand for him. He said, "No, you better sit down. People who are in the middle of their work day are not allowed to stand for Talmud Chachamim when they're busy with their work, because at the time that they're standing, they're not doing their work, and whoever hired them is therefore not getting his money's worth. So you're supposed to be working the cash register right now. You're supposed to be working as a money changer. So you have to work on that. I'll find someone else to, you can't be, taking off time to help me out with changing the money." That's how Rashi understands. Tosfos understands in the name of Rabbi Yaakov Bar Shimshon that Bar Nafcha was talking about Bali Umnios who work for themselves. And Ein Rashayim doesn't mean you're not allowed to, it means you're not obligated to. That when you're in the middle of your workday, you're not obligated to stand for Tamidei Chachamim. But the Pashup Shat L'chor is like Rashi, that they're working for someone else, and he's saying, because you're working for someone else, you are not permitted to stand for me when you're in the middle of working for somebody else in the middle of a workday. So frankly, Gemara, velo, are you really not allowed to stand for someone, for a Talmud Chacham, middle of your workday? Vatnan, isn't there a very famous mission in the third parak of Maseches Bikurim that when it describes how the parade of the Mevi'ei Bikurim in Yerushalayim, it said, Kol Balei Umni Yasamtim Mipneihem, all the people in the middle of their workday would stand in front of them, would stand for them in order to be mechabid them, v'shalom v'shloman, and they would greet them, v'amrul machinu, anshe makomploni, bo'achem v'shalom, and as each group came by, they would greet them, like, you know, the announcers at the Israeli Day Parade, you know, where they announce each group that parades on by, they say, oh, now it's the Hebrew Academy of whatever, right? So they would greet all of these people as they were walking by, and they would say, bo'achem l'shalom, but what are they, they're in the middle of a work day, so they would, apparently, they're allowed to stand for Mekai Mitzvah. So I'm Rabbi Yochanan says, No, Eino Chinami. They're allowed to stand for Mekai Mitzvah. They're not allowed to stand for Talmidei Chachamim. I'm Rabbi Yossi Bar Ravin. Wow. Bo Re'ei Kama Chaviva Mitzvah B'Shaita. Look how precious and special it is when people do mitzvahs at a particular time, in a time-sensitive mitzvah, and they do it on time. Sharei Mipnei Amomdin, because for someone who's doing a mitzvah B'Shaita, you would stand even in the middle of your workday, but you would not stand for a Talmud Chacham in the middle of your workday. Pnei Yeshua in Kiddushin Daf Lamed Gimel says, well, wait a second, Talmud Torah is more chashuv than any kiyum mitzvah. It's the biggest mitzvah. So I don't understand. How come you don't stand for Talmud Chacham? They're always learning Torah. So isn't that so? One simple answer would have been, Pnei Yeshua doesn't say it, is we're saying chaviv mitzvah b'shaita. Not anyone who does a mitzvah do you stand for. It's got to be a mitzvah b'shaita. It's got to be a mitzvah that has a specific time, and now the time for that mitzvah has arrived, so we're standing for the people who do that mitzvah, whereas Talmud Torah is every second of every day. The Pnei Yeshua says, who says the Talmud Chacham are learning at the moment? Meaning if they're not learning at the moment, then you wouldn't be standing for them. It's a big question. Do we stand for anyone who goes to do a mitzvah? Right? Some explain that the reason that the minigin in America, at least, is that they stand for the chassan and the kala when they walk down the aisle, which is a bit of a funny minig, meaning what did they accomplish in life yet? Meaning they're young kids. Why are we standing for them? The grandparents? There you have to stand for. That's a pasuk in the Torah. Although I was at a wedding recently and the grandparents walked down and I stood up and I'm looking at them like, there's no way they're 70 years old. You know, sometimes you have very young grandparents. So if they're not 70, you don't have an obligation to stand for them. But usually grandparents at a wedding are 70 years old. So if they're 70 years old, you got to stand for them. So that's a pasuk in the Torah. That there's no doubt. But there's some that explain that the reason we stand for the chassan and kala is because they're mekayim mitzvah. Aye, does the kala have a mitzvah? The chassan has a mitzvah of puravu, and this is the beginning of that mitzvah of puravu. Elamai, if you stand for the chassan, you better stand for the kala too. This might be where it comes from, that we stand by Vayivarech David during Pesukei Dezimra, because that's the time where the minig is to give tzedakah. So everyone's running to go give tzedakah. So we're standing for the mekayim mitzvah that are going to be mekayim this mitzvah of giving tzedakah. So the Gemara says, no, mimai, how do you know that the reason that we stand for the Mevi'ei Bikurim is because chaviva mitzvah b'shaita, and they're so chashuv because they're doing a mitzvah right now? Nah, dilma kadei shalotei nimtza makshilin lasad lavo. Maybe the reason that we're standing for them is that we want to encourage them to bring Bikurim again in the future, that they're parading into town, and they're probably thinking in the back of their minds, everyone's probably making fun of us, no one thinks that we're doing anything important over here, so we want to show them that we think this is a very chashuv thing that they're doing, and therefore we want to stand for them to show that it matters to us. The Aruch HaShulchan writes in the Shulchan Aruch in Yerides and Reish Memdalid writes, someone who's osik b'mlachas atzmo does not have to stop, is not required to stop. If you're osik b'mlachas acherim, you're not allowed to stop when a Talmud Chacham walks by. So the Aruch HaShulchan writes that, you know, according to the Shach has a chiddush that the din that a Talmud Chacham should not be over lifnei atzibur k'deish lo la'atricham. Halacha is Talmud Chacham should not make everyone stand for him. He should be conscious of the fact that if he's going to walk into a room, everybody's going to stand up. He should try to figure out another way. He shouldn't be matriach l'tzibur. So the Shach writes that halacha was only b'mehem when everyone used to sit on the floor, because to go from sitting on the floor to standing up, that's a tircha. But nowadays, says the Shach, everyone's sitting on a chair. What's the big deal? People go like this. It's not no big deal, right? So the Shach says Talmud Chacham doesn't have to be so mindful of that anymore. So says the Aruch HaShulchan, it could be that this whole halacha that you're not allowed to stand when a Talmud Chacham walks in the middle of your work day, maybe doesn't apply if your work is sitting down in a chair, not sitting down on the floor, that it was only when it was a significant distraction from one's work day that halacha would be relevant. Okay, we'll stop here. Ben Hashem, tomorrow afternoon, early evening, I do hope to do Daf Nun Hey, but we'll pick up from, we're a little bit behind, not so bad. We'll pick up from the sugya of Ad V'Ad B'Chlal and Ad V'Lo Ad B'Chlal. Everyone have a wonderful evening, and thank you so much for joining.